And this is Telling Tales with Ms. G, and I don't know, maybe it's the weather, but I decided I really was interested in some spooky stories. So that's what I've got for you tonight. Some short spooky stories. First one is by Lady Jane Francesca Wilde. It's called The Celtic Fairy Tale, The Horned Women. Give you a moment to get settled, and I'll be right back with some scary stories. You're at Telling Tales with Ms. G, KTO 4.3. And now for something a little scary. This is Ms. G. I'm bringing you Telling Tales here tonight at 104.3 KTOO. And my first short story is a Celtic fairy tale titled The Horned Women by Lady Jane Francesca Wilde. A rich woman sat up late one night carding and preparing wool while all the family and servants were asleep. Suddenly a knock was given at the door and a voice called, "Open, open." "Who is there?" said the woman of the house. "I am the witch of one horn," was answered. The mistress, supposing that one of her neighbors had called and required assistance, opened the door, and a woman entered, having in her hand a pair of wool carders and bearing a horn on her forehead as if growing there. She sat down by the fire in silence and began to card the wool with violent haste. Suddenly she paused and said aloud, "Where are the women? They delay too long." Then a second knock came to the door and a voice called as before, "Open, open." The mistress felt herself obliged to rise and open to the call, and immediately a second witch entered, having two horns on her forehead and in her hand a wheel for spinning wool. "Give me place," she said. "I am the witch of the two horns." And she began to spin as quick as lightning. And so the knocks went on, and the call was heard, and the witches entered, until at last 12 women sat round the fire, the first with one horn, the last with 12 horns. And they carded the thread and turned their spinning wheels and wound and wove, all singing together an ancient rhyme, but no word did they speak to the mistress of the house. Strange to hear and frightful to look upon were these 12 women with their horns and their wheels. And the mistress felt near to death, and she tried to rise that she might call for help, but she could not move, nor could she utter a word or a cry, for the spell of the witches was upon her. Then one of them called to her in Irish and said, "Rise, woman, and make us a cake." Then the mistress searched for a vessel to bring water from the well, that she might mix the meal and make the cake, but she could find none. And they said to her, "Take a sieve and bring water in it." And she took the sieve and went to the well, but the water poured from it, and she could fetch none for the cake, and she sat down by the well and wept. Then a voice came by her and said, "Take yellow clay and moss and bind them together, and plaster the sieve so that it will hold." This she did, and the sieve held the water for the cake, and the voice said again, return, and when thou comest to the north angle of the house, cry aloud 3 times and say, the mountain of Daphnian women and the sky over, it is all on fire. And she did so. When the witches inside heard the call, a great and terrible cry broke from their lips, and they rushed forth with wild lamentations and shrieks and fled away to Slieve-Naaman, where was their chief abode. But the spirit of the well bade the mistress of the house to enter and prepare her home against the enchantments of the witches if they returned again. And first, to break their spells, she sprinkled the water in which she had washed her child's feet, the feet water, outside the door on the threshold. Secondly, she took the cake, which in her absence the witches had made of meal, mixed with the blood drawn from the sleeping family, and she broke the cake in bits and placed a bit in the mouth of each sleeper, and they were restored. And she took the cloth they had woven and placed it half in and half out of the chest with the padlock. And lastly, she secured the door with a great cross beam fastened in the jambs, so that the witches could not enter. And having done these things, she waited. Not long were the witches in coming back, and they raged and called for vengeance. Open, open, they screamed. Open, feet water. I cannot, said the feet water. I am scattered on the ground, and my path is down to the loft. Open, open, wood and trees and beam, they cried to the door. I cannot, said the door, for the beam is fixed in the jambs, and I have no power to move. Open, open, cake that we have made and mingled with blood, they cried again. I cannot, said the cake, for I am broken and bruised, and my blood is on the lips of the sleeping children. Then the witches rushed through the air with great cries and fled back to Slieve-Naaman, uttering strange curses on the spirit of the well who had wished their ruin. But the woman and the house were left in peace, and a mantle dropped by one of the witches in her flight was kept hung up by the mistress in memory of that night. And this mantle was kept by the same family from generation to generation for 500 years. After. That was a Celtic fairy tale, The Horned Women, by Lady Jane Francesca Wilde. This is Ms. G. I'm bringing you Telling Tales here tonight at KTOO 104.3. I'll be right back with another short, short ghost story. This is Ms. G. I'm bringing you Telling Tales here tonight, and I have another short story for you, technically called a spooky story, Tales of Hauntings and Strange Happenings and Other Local Lore, and it's retold by S.E. Schlosser. So, This one is titled The Wizard in the Hollow from Sag Harbor, Long Island. The wizard had no friends, save his three demon familiars, who took the form of black ravens. His tribe was frightened by him, and though he had their respect, there were none who loved him. He had embraced the dark for so long that none with a pure heart would come near him. So he lived alone on Block Island for many a weary year. He grew bitter in his solitude. Perhaps, he reasoned, if he struck a mighty victory against the great enemy of his people, the Montauk chief, Wyandanch, he would find the acceptance he craved. So a time came when Wyandanch and several of his warriors went in secret to Block Island, the territory of the wizard's tribe, seeking eagle plumes to use in their sacred ceremonies. The wizard learned of the chief's presence on the island and alerted his people. The bloodshed that followed was horrendous. In the end, the only survivors were the chief and the wizard. When Wyandanch returned to his home on Long Island, the wizard secretly followed. The wizard was enraged by the slaughter of his people and was determined to enlist the dark forces to unite against the Montauk chief. There were giants who lived near Napig, and the wizard petitioned them to unite against Wyandanch. But the giants refused him, so he returned to the renegades. The bitter and the scorned sought their support, to no avail. Even in this new land, the wizard was alone, save for his raven familiars. Enraged and bitter, the wizard determined to do alone what none else would dare. He would topple the chief himself. Hidden within a dark hollow, the wizard worked evil spell after evil spell, each aimed at the mighty Wyandanch. With each new sorcery, the wizard's malice grew, and with it his power. It was not long before the great chief of the Montauk began to falter under the weight of the evil spells being pressed upon him. Wyandanch began to lose his prowess in the hunt, and his wise voice was no longer heard within the council. The Montauk became alarmed at this sudden change in their chief. They knew something was wrong, and the wisest members of their tribe began to search for the cause. In the end, it was one of the renegades who told the tribe about the wizard who hated Wyandanch and had followed him from Block Island, determined to destroy him. The young men of the tribe were enraged by this attack on their chief. They began searching for the wizard, determined to find him. They interviewed all the outcasts, and one young warrior went to speak to the giants, seeking the hiding place of the wizard. The giants had been watching the wizard from afar, tracking his movements, but not interfering with him as long as he left them alone. But they were open to bribery, and for a price they told the Montauk where to find him. The warriors made their plans carefully. In the darkest part of the night, they surrounded the hollow where the wizard lived and crept stealthily toward his hiding place. The wizard's familiars sensed the approach of the warriors. They leaped skyward, shouting the alarm as they transformed into brilliant creatures of light and shadow and fled out over the ocean. Below them, the wizard rose from his hiding place, lifted his arms, and shouted a mighty curse upon the men who sought his death. He called upon his raven familiars to rend the bodies and spirits of the Montauk warriors. But the brave spirits and pure hearts of the young men repelled the raven familiars, and they turned against their master instead. A dense cloud of light and shadow rose from the sea and swept onto the land. The cloud swirled around and around the wizard, obscuring him from the gaze of the watching Montauk warriors. Where the cloud touched the wizard, it burst into flames. The flames flared brighter and brighter against the dark night. Trapped inside the cloud, the wizard shouted his most potent spells, beating at the flames and trying to break free. But the flaming cloud twisted around and around him, pushing him steadily toward the ocean. The warrior stood in silence, watching as the wizard was swept up into the cloud of flame and carried out to sea. The wizard uttered one terrible shrieking cry that echoed and re-echoed through the night. Then he was gone. With his death, the curse on the chief was lifted, and Wyandanch was whole once more. Each winter, from then until now, the shade of the wizard returns to the hollow from whence he worked his evil spells on the Montauk chief. On dark nights, he can still be heard shrieking his curses through the crisp, cold air. That was The Wizard in the Hollow from Sag Harbor, Long Island, and that was retold by S.E. Schlosser. This is Ms. G. I'm bringing you Telling Tales here at 104.3 KTOO in Juneau, and I'll be right back. Hello. I hope you've been enjoying the short stories tonight here at Telling Tales, KTOO. I have one last one for you tonight. It's called Redemption. It's out of the same storybook. It's from West Seneca in New York, and it's retold by S.E. Schlosser. I watched them from the upper window as they played games in the yard. They never seemed to see me. The mother or the father. They were young, caught up in their own lives and concerns, and did not have time for an old German man who did not speak English as well as he should. But their little boy saw me. He looked up and waved cheerfully to me, and his mother asked who he was waving to. "My friend," he said, pointing at me. She looked up at the window, and her gaze went straight through me. She turned away, and I sighed. Only children seem to notice what is really there. Adults are too busy to see. I liked this new family who lived in my old home. The father was an honest man who loved his wife and son. He took good care of them, and as I once took good care of my wife and son. The mother was charming and intelligent, a fine companion for him. But it was their little boy whom I loved. He was so much like my son who died so many years ago. The boy and I talked and laughed together. He liked my jokes and tried to imitate my German accent. One night, he asked me to tell him a bedtime story. I remember the old folk tales my mother used to tell me, and so I sat beside his bed and told him of a goose girl who became a queen. The little boy listened with wide eyes and wanted me to tell him another, just as I had done when my mother finished a tale. I told the boy what my mother told me. Only one story per night, mein King. Tomorrow I will tell you another tale. I watched from the door as he fell asleep. Many nights my wife and I had stood in this very doorway watching our son as he slept. I walked away slowly, thinking about my wife. I loved her more than I loved my own life. And when she died, she took the best pieces of me with her. The death of my only son had created a hole in my heart. The death of my wife had destroyed my life completely. I couldn't eat. I couldn't sleep. I couldn't care for myself at all. I just sat in my chair day after day until life faded from my body. But my soul remained behind, trapped in this house and yard. Almost every night thereafter, I would tell the boy a new folktale from my homeland. Sometimes I would hear him relating the stories to his mother and father the next day. They were always amazed by his tales and did not know where he had learned them, even though they had been sharing the house with me from the day they moved in. I sometimes wondered if I would always live in this house. I wanted so badly to be with my wife, but my spirit could never reach her, no matter how often I tried to leave. I was trapped here, and even the company of the nice family and their little boy was not enough to assuage my soul. Had my spirit remained here, I wondered, because I had given up at the end instead of trying to go on. I knew the doctrines of my church taught that God does not condone suicide. Or perhaps it was because I wanted my wife more than I wanted anything else, and God was punishing me by keeping us apart. One night after I finished my story, I stood at the boy's window thinking about my wife as I gazed about the stars. I do not know how much time had passed when I saw a flickering light from the ground floor window of the apartment building behind the house. I went outside to take a closer look, and I saw that the building was on fire. I ran to the parent's bedroom and tried to shake the father awake, but my hands went right through him. He sighed and turned over but did not wake up. The mother did not stir when I called her name, and I knew the only hope for the two girls who lived in the apartment above the fire was my little friend. I went to the boy, woke him gently, and told him about the fire. He got up at once and went to rouse his parents. They protested a little, but the boy was persuasive, and his father went out to the yard to check on the apartment building. I followed him and watched him gasp in alarm when he saw the fire and hurry to give warning. Later, when everyone was safe and the fire was out, I stood in the yard looking up at the little boy's window. He was watching the action in wide-eyed excitement, happy to have been the one who had saved the day. When he saw me, he waved. I waved back, hardly aware yet that the yard was becoming misty around me, as a beautiful white light illuminated the scene. It was the look on the little boy's face that alerted me. I turned and saw my wife standing a few feet behind me. Behind her, I caught a glimpse of a beautiful country full of light and laughter and love. She held out her hand to me, and I stepped forward and took it. I was smiling so hard, my face felt sore, but I didn't care about that, any more than I was worried about the tears rolling down my cheeks. We both turned to wave to the little boy. Then we stepped forward into the light and did not look back. That was Redemption from West Seneca, New York, and it was retold by S.E. Schlosser. This is Telling Tales with Ms. G. I hope you've enjoyed these short stories. And until next time, I'm going to leave you with some music for now. And I hope you have a nice rest of your week.